I'm Steve Bordner. I'm an alcoholic. And I am so glad to be here. There's so many newcomers. It is so cool. You are going to inherit this program, and I'm certainly glad that you're here. Don't let anybody tell you the best days of AA are over. That's not true at all. Yeah, I got tired of going to places where it was always the best days before I got there. And yeah, I didn't intend to be an alcoholic. It's just I have this physical allergy and this mental obsession, and I don't. If I drink, I do keep drinking more, and then if I don't drink, my head tells me I have to drink. It's a conundrum, and it seems like that only some sort of spiritual experience will cure that for me, and I'm glad I know that. If you say the word alcoholic, it doesn't really mean much, or let's put it a different way, it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, right? But for here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a definition. We define our term. Alcohol of our type is somebody with a physical allergy and mental obsession and in need of a spiritual experience. And we knew from the beginning, I mean, Dr. Silkworth and Bill Wilson and everybody else knew it wasn't technically an allergy, but it's the easiest way to explain it, that I have an abnormal reaction to ethyl alcohol. Most people, when they drink it, they have a drink and it goes, eh. I take an ounce, 2 ounce, 3 ounces of ethyl alcohol. I swallow it, it goes down in my stomach, and the sun rises. It comes out my arms, down my legs. I stretch out, and every pore in my body goes, ah. Now, if your sphincter got a little tighter when I told you that, you might be an alcoholic too. It's an abnormal reaction. A friend of mine, he has, they were at a wedding with his mother, and it was a destination wedding, and she was this in Italy, and it was music was playing, and he noticed she had about a drink and a half, and then she stopped. And he said, "Mom, why do you stop drinking?" She said, "Well, after a drink and a half, the music gets a little dimmer. I'm not interested in people as much as I like. I don't like people as much, and I feel out of control." And I thought that is a completely different reaction for me. When I drink, the music gets a lot brighter. I like you a lot more because I don't particularly care for people, especially in groups, just naturally. But I like people a lot more when I'm drinking, and out of control feels in control. I'm a very lucky person. I talk about my first meeting as Dorothy landing in Oz. You know the movie, it's in black and white, and then when Dorothy gets into Oz, it turns into color. That's what happened when I came in. I came in, and for the first time in my life, I ran into people who had the same, maybe not the same circumstances, but the same relationship to alcohol that I had. And I didn't know they existed. I thought I was the only one. And then they were drinking, and they were so friendly, and they were glad I was there. I was just astonished by the whole thing when I first came in. Now, I didn't get sober my very first meeting and stay sober. I got sober about after 3 weeks, on May 25th. I came in about May 3rd. May 25th, I took my last drink, and I haven't had to take one since then. And listen, I admire people who have had a relapse and come back. I don't know what that's like. I can't tell you. I can't say I know how you feel like I can with drinking, but I admire that. I just haven't had to do it, and I was just so broken when I got here, and I didn't get a lot of the consequences that other people had, but they were coming. It's not yet. I hadn't got a DUI yet. I hadn't been in jail yet. I did have a wife that left me, and she didn't come back. Smart woman, but unfortunately she went on to marry another alcoholic, but that's a whole other part of this disease. And I want to tell a story too, because it's so many newcomers here. I want to gear it towards that. You might be feeling like, oh, yeah, I'm new. I'm not drinking. But what do I have to give? What do I have to give right now? You have to give it away to keep it. So around 1994, some very nice people, I think in Tennessee somewhere, had asked me to come speak at their convention. And I flew in. No, at that time, there was no Zoom. You had no idea who was picking you up. It was usually somebody with a long beard and a white van. You just figured they were going to kill you and dump you somewhere. So they pick me up and we drive about an hour. Now I'm flying from Los Angeles to Memphis. So the time's going back. It's later there, and I'm the Friday night speaker, which I always like, but I don't have time to relax. I get in the hotel room, put my speaking clothes on. They have a dinner before, and I'm talking to this guy. He's got about 10 years. I got about 15 years. We're hitting it off in there. So I do the talk, I do the thank you line. I get back to my hotel. I'm getting out of the car that took me. I'm just going to go right to my bed. He pulls up and says, "Hey, Steve, we got a 12-step call. You want to come?" No, I did not want to go. But how are you going to not go? I just talked for an hour or so about how wonderful it was. So I said, sure. So we get in the car. It's me. He's me, 15 years. He's got 10 years. And the guy in the back got 30 days. Now, again, I'm out in the middle of nowhere in a car with people I don't really know. So I don't know if they're going to dump my body on the side of the road. And on the way, when we get far enough away from the hotel, he says, "Oh yeah, by the way, he's got a gun." Okay, well, I listen. Drunks with guns, that kind of, and you take it away from them. So we get there. Guy went, "Eh," we took it away from him. You know who we wanted to talk to? He didn't want to talk to me. He didn't want to talk to the guy with 10 years. He wanted to talk to the guy with 30 days. See? I mean, if you got 30 days, 10 days, 9 days, somebody, when I got 30 days, because I just did not drink very much. I didn't have periods of not drinking. And I'm glad for that. I had no periodic kind of, I just drank. And so when I got 30 days without drinking, I was in. You had me. That was absolutely impossible. You remember when you knew and you think, man, if I had 30 days, my life would be terrific. All my problems would be solved. And you realize that's not quite the truth, but things are better. I'm one of those people, when I stop drinking, I feel better. And I realize there are people in the rooms that when they stop drinking, they don't feel better. They feel worse. But I was one of those people. I got on my little pink cloud and I was just excited. We got somebody drinking. Yeah, we're gonna go get them. And we just got into this whole thing of running around, helping people, going to meetings, meeting people. It was a very small place. I got sober in Columbia, South Carolina, and it was a very small program. 5 years was a long time at that time. I just read a Grapevine article from 1949, and so it's like, what are we gonna do with our old timers? And by old timers, I meant people with 4 or 5 years. It was a long time at that time. Those people had never seen anybody get sober. One of the reasons the book is because it worked, and this worked on people that nothing else worked on. So if you're new, you do have something. You have something about to give to the person right next to you who's just looking to get another day right after you. And it's such a great gift. Such a great gift. To be able to help somebody, to be able to help somebody maybe in a way that nobody else can help. That's a tremendous gift for being a broken down drunk like I was, And sometimes I try to describe, what's sobriety like? I don't know if this will make sense to you. I hope it does. About 1990, I was getting licensed in my profession, decided to go to a Club Med, to celebrate. And then I decided I wasn't going to take the whole scuba course because that was the whole thing. It would use the whole vacation. But you could take a thing called resort certification, which is you stayed in the pool for 3 days, practiced some stuff, and you went down with a dive instructor. Okay, so the first thing that happens is they put a regulator in your mouth. They put your, to tell you, put your head underwater and breathe. Now, I don't know about you, but the first thing I heard was my mother's voice in there. Don't put your head underwater. You breathe it again. You know, as a kid, you do it, then you don't do it again. So put your head in the water with this regulator, and then you breathe. You're doing something. I was doing something I'd never been able to do before. Now, it's pretty humiliating, you know, while all the beautiful people with their slim hip girlfriends are going out in the boat into the ocean and everything, you're going to the pool. You know, you look like well, I'd say Lloyd Bridges, but none of you probably remember that. But you look at you're in the pool with all your gear on, and you're taking the mask off, put it on, regulator, and put it on, and you know, and then everybody goes to dinner and they talk about, well, I saw a manta ray and I saw a shark. And you're saying, well, I saw a quarter down on the bottom of the thing. And after you do that for 3 days, they take you out in the boat and you jump in. Now, the difference between a pool and a boat is there is no bottom to the ocean that you can see. You know, and you go down. And if you can stay down, there's a whole new world down there. There's little anemones and fishes that have been looked at. You know, it's the third tour of the day. They're really tired of tourists, the whole bit. And that's kind of like what sobriety is. You know, I could do things that I've never done before. When it came to alcohol, I was immune. I tell you how immune it is. It says in the book, right? It says in the book, if tempted, we would recoil from a hot flame. So jump to 2008, and I lived up near what, Bill, I think. I was living in Westchester County at Mount Kisco, and I was playing tennis on this league, and we were horrible. We were the worst tennis team there, but we had a lot of fun, and we were playing these guys on the that had a beautiful club on the Hudson River. And afterwards, they said, "Let's all go have a drink." And I thought, "Well, all right, I have Diet Coke and hang with out with them for a minute." So they were drinking dark beer. Now, let me tell you, if you're going to go to a place where there's alcohol being served, mark your glass, right? Just mark your glass. So all of a sudden, I pick up what I think is my Diet Coke, and I got a mouthful of beer. I couldn't swallow it. It wouldn't allow me to swallow it. But now I'm trying to figure out where can I spit it out? You know, and I'm looking around, I finally see the Hudson River, I spit it out, I take a couple sips of the Diet Coke, spit that out, a couple more sips, spit that out. And I hear behind me, the guy says, "Boy, you really don't like beer, do you?" I wanted to go, "Man, if you only knew, if you only knew." But of course, I wasn't going to get mad. I said, "No, I don't really care for it." And just left it at that. But that's the miracle of this program, you know. The reason I believe the directions in the book are true is because they've worked for me. And I believe that if you take them anywhere close to the way they're written with somebody who understands how to say, my sponsor had 2 years. It was a great sponsor, but I know he's a better, I know I'm a better sponsor now than when I was at 2 years. I know how to take somebody through the fourth step, which seems to be the breaking point. You know, people get in the program and for some reason they get to that fourth step and they just don't want to do it. You know, I have a friend who has passed away now, much better sponsor than me, a much better sponsor than me. And he said he must have, for every 100 inventory outlines he would give out, maybe he'd get 10 back. And that's too bad because this fourth step's not anywhere near, in my opinion, in my experience, anywhere near as scary as it seems to be. You know, and at 2 years of sobriety, I went from that little town in South Carolina to LA. It was a very different program in LA. There were young people all over the place. There were people of all sorts of nationalities and sexualities and everything else. First meeting I went to, I looked it up in the directory back in the day before we had directories. You had to look it up. And, I saw this meeting. It was close to where I was. I didn't think I'd get lost. So I went to it. Now, I don't know about you, but if I go to a new meeting, I kind of sit outside it first and scan it out. I want to check it and see what's going on. what's going on is alcoholics going to meetings. But what I noticed was it was mostly men and mostly men in twos. Well, I'm going to a meeting. Well, it was a primarily gay meeting, and the first one I'd ever been to. What most wonderful meeting in the world. They were the nicest people to me. I gotta tell you, they just it went overboard. And I was my welcome to LAAA, which is I still speak AA with a California accent, I'm told. And I loved it. I loved it out there until I moved back. Well, I'm of the opinion that when we talk about the four step, that you can either work the 12 steps of recovery or you can work the 12 steps of alcoholism. And what you can't do is not work a program if you're an alcoholic of my type. And the 12 steps of alcoholism might go something like this. I declared I was complete control of my life, my drinking, and my life was fine and dandy. Thank you very much. I always knew that you needed to be restored to sanity. Ask God to do it. Four, make a list of all persons who had harmed me. Five, admit nothing to nobody ever. Six, was humbly ready, humbly asked God to turn you into an alcoholic. Eight, made a list of all persons I had harmed. Hold back. That's the eight. I made a list of all persons who had harmed me and became willing to take revenge upon them all. Nine, took direct revenge whenever possible, especially when do so would injure them and others. 10, continue to take your inventory and when you were wrong, promptly admit did it to you. 11, sought through alcohol and medication to improve my unconscious contact with myself, praying only for what I wanted and when I wanted it and the power to get it. And 12, having achieved spiritual death as a result of these steps, I carried this message to other alcoholics and tried to take as many with them as me with me, take as many of them with me as I could. And there's only one tradition: do whatever you got to do to get through the night. Two 12-step programs. And I, the alcoholic, will work one or I will work the other. But what I won't do is not work the program. As Bobby D said, you got to serve somebody. I love it. Little, I'm also ADHD. So the little hearts and the clapping things are going on. I'm just like, oh, there they go. If I may totally lose my train of thought because, it's like squirrel. Oh, okay. And I will tell you, I never planned to get old. When I came in at 30, I never knew I'd be 77 here. Don't the time is one day at a time. If you don't die and you don't drink, you get time. Don't worry about it. After you got 20 years, I don't think you need any more time. You got more time than anybody, most people in there, and you can just see. I'm 35 inside. My problem today with sobriety is I walk in my house and I look in the mirror and I wonder how that old guy got in my house and who the hell is he?
2 minutes left, Stephen.
Yep, thank you. I'm losing my comrades from the days we all were running around with 5 years and going here and there and feather and Vaughn and going to conventions together. I've got comrades that can't get to meetings anymore because of their balance. And thank God for Zoom. Thank God for Zoom. Because they can still go to meetings and still be in touch. And look at how many people are here that just can sit, you have no idea whether I even have pants on underneath this, Who knows? Who knows? Right? So listen, I mess with young, I mess with newcomers. Like some guy will call me and he'll say, I'm breaking up with my girlfriend. Can I said, well, you doing all right? He said, yeah, okay. 1 o'clock in the morning, he's not doing all right anymore. He wants to talk to me, right? And I'm half asleep. So I go, well, read page 72. I don't know what's on 72. Just came to mind. He hangs up. 10 minutes later, he goes, thanks for 72, Steve. It saved my life. So I got to go read 72 to figure out what I said. It's a crazy program. 1 and 1 equals 3 here. Because God does the addition. I hope you find what I found here. This Dr. Bob says he goes to meetings because it's a duty. It's a pleasure. There's another one there I'm blanking on, but and that He does it. Oh, yeah, to take some time out to pay back the people who took time out to talk to him. That's all it is. That's all it is. We are a fellowship. There are no great, no, nobody's more important than anybody. And with that, I'm going to quit with my time. Thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to be here.